Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everybody. Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden on the True Straight Up, brought to you by...
Brought to you by HappyTrees.co and Denver Cenogenics and Dr. Julie McKellen. Well, you know, Leo, you aptly named it last time we were on Monday, Wacky Wednesday. So when I closed the show on Wednesday, or on Monday, I said, well, I'm not sure what's going to be going on in the show on Wednesday, but who knows, a lot of things can happen. Then lo and behold, the FBI raids Donald Trump's home for apparently blatantly political reasons. So we're going to be talking a lot about that. Mark Poff is coming up at 3:30, going to talk about search warrants and things like that. But we've got to start with Bruce Baker, Westminster City Council member.
Yeah, Bruce is maybe my favorite city council member in all of Colorado, and particularly Westminster. He's going to tell us what the Republicans have done and maybe could do more of coming up. But first, we want to get his thoughts on the raid on Mar-a-Lago and how it was... Interesting.
Hey, welcome, Bruce. Welcome to the show. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much, guys. I always appreciate you having me on. Outrageous.
Yeah.
Again, it speaks to one of the most critical areas in our current society, and for me, so foreign and strange from the American society I grew up in, is this clear and blatant selective enforcement of our laws.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, my goodness. On the most flimsiest of reasons that we've heard.
Right. And we don't have a whole show to go through the double standards. And let me ask you about this, too. I mean, you know, you've been involved in politics and city government. When they tell us those 87,000 new IRS agents, they're not going to go after the middle class.
No, no.
I mean, do you buy that, too? Because if so, you know, we've got some property we want you to take a look at, you know.
Okay. Swampland in Florida or maybe
there
the
you
Brooklyn
go.
Bridge? I've always wanted the Brooklyn Bridge. They're going to go where the money is, and the money is where the average ordinary taxpayer is. The
right.
Average ordinary taxpayer carries most of the load of the federal government and will always.
Well, you know, I was reading a tweet and it's true. It says that rich people pay lawyers. Poor people pay the IRS. And I think that there's a lot of truth to that. Well, something else, though, because we've been talking a lot about this show, Chuck, on this show, I wanted to talk about, though, is I think you are living proof, or your political experience is proof, that citizens can make a difference. We started talking to you several years ago after the Progressive City Council of Westminster skyrocketed the water rates in the city of Westminster. I mean, our bill was running over $600 a month. People were angry about that, and people responded to that, elected you and other people, and now our water rates are back down to something being reasonable. People should not give up, right? And I would say in the face of all of this, people can make a difference.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. Never give up. Never give up. And there's an old saying that the price of liberty is eternal vigilance.
Yeah.
And that's a very high price. And that's a very steep price to pay. And most of us would like to really lower our sight and shrug our shoulders and hope someone else does it. But no, we've got to do it ourselves. We have to carry the burden ourselves. And in this case, it made a tangible difference on your June and July bill, I'm sure.
Yes, it did. Well, and going back to something you said.
Well, tell us about how the process was. It a city council vote, or what was the process of getting the water rates reduced?
It began with the people being angry enough to start to do something about it. And we actually, back in 2020, had a recall effort.
Right.
And that recall effort was successful in terms of gathering signatures.
Right.
And then the management of the city of Westminster came up with the flimsiest of excuses to reject the petition.
Right.
Now, there were enough hard-nosed people and wealthy people in the recall effort that we took it to district court.
Well, it was not, yeah, well, I certainly contributed money toward it.
Absolutely. And, absolutely. And a lot of other people did. And I'm sure this very much surprised the city leaders.
Yes.
Because they didn't think the people would spend the money to do that.
Right.
Well, 5 months later, the judge says, City of Westminster, you erred. You have denied all these signatures their right to recall, to have a recall election. The results of the recall election were disappointing, but that was because who we had running and who we had campaigning, and they really didn't, I don't feel, put enough fire into it.
Right.
So then when 4 months later, the general election comes, myself and several other candidates, specifically Mayor Nancy McNally and Mayor Pro Tem David DeMott, ran and we won. And we then had a majority of 5 who thought these water rates were wrong and outrageous. And after much wrangling at City Hall and trying to serve everyone's needs and listening to what the staff said, we finally came with a partial lowering of the water rates. And that's what we're seeing on now.
Right.
I can go into any aspect of that further if you wish, but elections make a difference and elections have consequences. So just like we lowered the water rates, we also have now announced our choice for a new city manager. And he is really the driving force of how this city runs.
Well, and I noticed there a sign up in front of the Westminster City Hall for a while this summer. It used to be the Westminster City employees only worked a 4-day week.
They still
now,
do.
But the city's open at least 5 days a week.
They have a skeletal staff.
Right? You can at least get something. Well, crazy, call that crazy that the city would serve its citizens. But there you go. At least that's changed too, right?
Absolutely. Rich, okay, of the Seymour, that was one of his issues. That was one of my issues. And our 3 other colleagues joined us in that. And the city got the word, though Chuck is also right, this is a show.
It's not a meaningful thing.
I go into city council meetings at 6 o'clock on Monday and the parking lot is full. So, you know, those employees are still working 4-day work weeks.
Right.
Well, one of the reasons, though, particularly seeing what we have been seeing going on and with the raid on Trump's home, and we've been talking a lot about, you know, the Colorado Republican Party, is there any hope? And I keep trying to find reasons to be optimistic. And I think your election, again, to the Westminster.
Well, Bruce is technically an independent, but had been a Republican. Is that right, Bruce?
Correct. Absolutely correct. I thought that changing to really affiliated back in 2021, then I couldn't be
typecast.
Yeah,
typecast as a Republican. Though sometimes I think I'm the only Republican on campus.
I think you are.
But still, I
agree with that analysis.
That's true. And we can get there. But again, I'm trying to be hopeful because I was failing on Monday to be hopeful. So I've struggled and Bruce. But I think, though, 2 things you said that I want to talk about, because we got to remember this. The Westminster water rates went up in part when you said people have to be vigilant, right? Because people in Westminster, we were all rolling along happily and we're not paying enough attention to who we were electing and what their plans were. I mean, is that
absolutely
fair to say?
True? Absolutely true, Julie.
And part of the good things that the new administration has brought in, there are always disappointments. I know I was at the meeting where they talked about the massive development on what they call Save the Farm, which is
uplands. That would be Federal uplands. And 84th to 88th, mm-hmm. just west of Federal Boulevard.
And listening to Dave DeMott saying that people should be able to do anything they want with land, I was kind of going, well, why have zoning? Why bother?
We want to raise rhinoceroses.
Yeah, what's the point, Dave? If they can do whatever they want, they can build.
Well, you
a
can do whatever
firm.
You want, Chuck. If you're a developer,
I represented developers when I was in private practice, and I would go to cities on their behalf and represent them. And I'd go talk to city councilmen and talk to city managers and all that. And I was so shocked they're willing to sell out their entire city on the most fallacious of arguments. I mean, I almost went, don't you understand?
You're ripping every one
of your citizens off. You're imposing on them an incredible tax burden without any income. And you're destroying what quality of life they have.
And, yet and these- it isn't just the tax burden, Chuck. On that one, okay, myself and my polar opposite on council were the only ones who voiced opposition to this. And we heard testimony. Right now, federal is over design capacity in terms of traffic.
Yeah.
And this development's going to add 25,000. And the council just shrugged their shoulders like this was no big deal.
Well, you know, you look at developers, this is sort of an aside, but over this weekend for folks that don't live in Colorado, there's a huge rainstorm and flooded, right? So remember Mayor Hancock, we have the corridor of opportunity along I-70. They trashed City Park Golf Course so it could be a flood zone, right? Mm-hmm. And then their brand new CDOT project, I-70, the fire department had to rescue roughly 30 people who were trapped in the flooding there. So much for the mayor's corridor of opportunity. And that flooding project didn't work very well, but that's
Is that Metro District fight still going on?
Yes. Well, the Metro District fight for the uplands is still going on. And this is another case where it just, we have policies in place and this is violating our policies in place. Why are we doing this? What is this special benefit we're supposed to get? And I have yet to hear it be verbalized. I have heard no special benefit whatsoever, except to the developer, of course. And in the case of the Metro District, this is really pernicious because it'll endure forever.
Yes.
And it effectively will double the property taxes of the poor, unfortunate souls who get conned into living into that development.
Well, you know, I was always amazed when I went for city councils, particularly ones that were Republican and stuff. And it reminded me of the cartoon, which there's a guy on a hospital bed, a couple of doctors over him saying, you know, I'm sorry, Ralph, but we're going to have to remove your backbone. And his wife saying, oh, that's okay. He's a Republican. He doesn't really have much of one.
Well, notice the difference.
Yeah, it's like a coaxial bone or something. It's a remnant of some earlier age.
Well, I mean, I would like to do that desperately with my colleagues on council. I would like to persuade them that we have lots of power. We have discretion. For me, that was one of my biggest disappointments with Trump. As president of the United States, he had enormous power, and yet he didn't seem to have enough friends to appoint into all the positions he could have and use that power. And I see the same thing on today's city council. We're not using the power that we truly have. I mean, some of us are so timid to, we might make a mistake. Well, I come from the school. If you don't make mistakes, you're probably not doing anything.
Well, the enormous power is when I was a legal counsel of the Planning Commission in Glendale and Kroger came in because they bought Cub Foods and they said, we need this. And I said, no, none of those. Okay. Not a single one of them. In fact, how can we make it worse for you? And so they said, we're going to sue you. And I kind of go, you think we care? honestly, this is a city hall. We have one liability insurance, and it means you're going to be waiting 3 years, and you're probably going to lose because what you want is not within our code. So go to it. And 3 years later, they came back hat in hand saying, and then we negotiated and said, well, we're going to sue you. I said, you already did that. Try it again. Do it 10 more times. Do it 1,000 more times.
We have city attorneys.
Yeah, we have city attorney. You know, hire Harlan Hart. Hire $500, $600 lawyers. Who cares? That's not a threat. That's a bonus. And yet cities don't get it. I'm sure they want to get it. They're so timid and afraid and just malleable. And you'd sit there with on council meetings at private ones and say, yeah, but they might do that. And you just laugh. Who cares?
Well, Well, here is a perfect example that really illustrates what you're saying, Chuck. And that's how we're dealing with the trespassers. Oh, I used the wrong term. The homeless. But they're trespassers. Well, yeah. back in like February and March of this year, they're doing all kinds of things and they're violating our ordinance. Clearly violating our ordinance. Our ordinance says you got to be out of our open space at sundown.
Okay.
So I want them out. I want them. I don't think this is difficult. I don't think this is hard. But my colleagues on council decide to have a continuum of compassion.
Continuum of compassion.
Wait,
excellent.
Wait. Oh my God.
Excellent.
I need a continuing of compassion. I'm married to Chuck, for God's sakes.
85,000 IRS agents. You need a
continuing of compassion.
But anyway, parts of it were good. We actually posted signs on all our open space saying you got to be out by sundown. Okay. Yeah. And so we did things like that. But we also, in addition to all the $300,000-$400,000 we were already spending on the trespassers, we added a whole nother person to be a navigator, a whole nother person to be a ranger, $100,000 to buy them housing vouchers in a nearby hotel that's not even in Westminster. So we added all this money, and then we hope that we could because it's my opinion that a lot of these people are there by choice. We can't fix them.
Certainly. No, they don't
this
care.
Is what they want to do.
They'll
so
sell
anyway,
their hotel voucher.
So anyway, we were going to have this continuum of compassion, which eventually moved to enforcement.
Yeah, okay. Eventually, right? Years later, yeah.
Well, unfortunately, that's the way the staff has been running it. And then just in this Saturday, we did this back in February and March, so we could lessen the number of homeless in Westminster, which would be a goal for 2023, right? Well, in our budget for 2023, our city staff has now allocated $1 million more for the homeless.
Now, my guess
this is not fixing a problem.
No.
This is just making a cottage industry out of it.
I was going to say, you could probably split that up and give a significant chunk of money to all of those people.
Give it to us, the citizens, a rebate.
Well, in the meantime, it is one of those infuriating things. And why they're doing this, I don't know. But you're right, it's a cottage industry. The homeless people are going to still be there. People won't be able to use the parks. I mean, it's, you know.
Well, it's one of those things. I mean, the sentiment that was expressed more than once is if we don't do this, the ACLU will sue us.
Oh.
And it was my opinion, bring it on. That's fine by me.
I'm going at it.
And here's something Sandra was asking earlier on in the chat section here, why did they raise the water rates? And Sandra, that's a really good point that I want to get Bruce to talk about. They raised the water rates because Westminster citizens weren't paying attention and they elected a bunch of progressives, emerge candidates, right? Got elected to the Westminster City Council. They raised the water rates because they hate single family homes. They want to have.
They hate single family homes. They hate cars. They hate trees. They hate green lawns. They want us all to live in high density apartment complexes, own nothing, and we'll be happy.
Exactly. That's why they raised the water rates. And because people woke up then, they put more common sense people like Bruce and back. And like you said, the Republicans are at least more Republican leaning have a thing. But we got to, what my question to you, Bruce, is would you suspect, I don't imagine that the emerge people said, oh, well, I guess we lost Westminster. Let's go look at Broomfield, right? I mean, they're going to be back in force, I think, with even more money next time around, don't you think?
Right. And I do need to underline it's the money.
Right.
If you look at who won the council seats, the highest spenders won the council seats. The guy who came in first spent $50,000, $35,000 of his own money. The guy who came in second spent $35,000. Well, the gal who came in third spent $17,000. And then there was an anomaly who spent a lot of money but didn't get in. And then I came in.
Okay. Well, and so
it was strictly money. It wasn't politics. It wasn't what kind of letter you had after your name. It was how much money you spent to put that advertising information out.
Well, and sadly, that's what politics is.
Yeah,
yes, absolutely.
Has expressed the same thing. Well, how do we then, and I guess the thing would be, the scary thing is people are going to be like, oh, good, my water rates are down now. I don't actually see any homeless people in my drive, so I'm not going to worry about it again. And then we'll wake up again when another bad thing happens. I mean, how important is it, do you think, that people...
No, people are not going to be ever vigilant. That's just, right. They have too many other things. Yeah. Well, yeah, but even we are not. You can't be hyper-vigilant on everything. I mean, all of a sudden I found out that they wanted to... change our we live on the golf course, and so it's a fence there, kind of a rustic one, and they said, no, we want to have it, you know, plastic, and there's an election and a huge fight, and they removed most of the people who wanted to plasticize the entire Highlands Hills. But I mean, there's always
somebody out there
after to screw you. But it's amazing. So who is the new city manager? Is it public information?
Absolutely. It is public information. His name is Mark Freitag. He has run the city of Janesville, Wisconsin for the last 8 years.
That's Paul Runyon's hometown.
Oh, right. Really? I did not know that.
Yeah.
I liked him because he understands what thrift is.
He understands
that his city in Janesville wasn't made of money.
Yeah.
Okay, and I think that's something that has really seduced everyone in the city of Westminster. Mm-hmm. We are a very rich city, and we had money like, okay, you go back to that water 2025 and the outrageous water rates.
Mm-hmm.
After I got on to council and had access to the information, and now they had to deliver the information to me, it found out that we had no idea what the new water plant would cost.
Mm.
No, well, no,
we were sure buying a water plant without knowing the cost of it.
Well, that's just...
How is that even possible?
Yeah. Well, I guess when you had $1 million to spend on the homeless. So back to my thing. I think, though, what's good about you and, you know, you're being elected again. And some of the things is that people say, okay, you know, maybe you can't make much of a difference on bigger things, right? But I think that people can make a difference when they stay engaged and when they pay attention. And, these smaller races that actually, frankly, impact us a heck of a lot more than some of the bigger races, you can make a difference still.
Oh, absolutely, Julianne. So many of these races are won by default.
Yes.
Is no one from the good side shows up.
Right.
We've had that in Adams County, right? Where there's.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Race is won by default. And especially when you get to school boards and cities, this is very common. This is very unusual. And so it's only understandable that the teachers union ends up running the school district.
Yeah.
Right.
Because they paid attention.
They have the money.
They voted. They ran the candidates.
Yeah. Well, and one other question, at least for me, before we let you go, because we've talked about this a lot with you, with the water rates and other issues. What's going on in Westminster is not unique at all, is it? Really?
No. And that should be a lesson. And we keep learning the same lesson over and over.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's a matter of doing. It's a matter of doing, and it's a matter of putting yourself where your mouth is. And if you really believe this, you really need to do that. And you need to hold your friends accountable.
Yeah.
You know, I need everyone's help to hold my five colleagues or four colleagues who share my points of view accountable and to use the power we have.
Yes.
Right now at our last budget meeting on Saturday, you know, I had back in April pleaded with my colleagues to say, let's give our staff some direction on what we want in a budget. Like I say, I want, you know, 10% less workers at the city, or I want a 15% less smaller budget. I want these smaller. Okay.
Right.
Let's give them the guidance. And my colleagues wouldn't go along with me. And I said, what I'm afraid of is they're going to do the budget the way most government does the budget.
Right.
And that is, what did we spend this year? Add a little bit to it And that's next year's budget.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
I couldn't convince my colleagues. I couldn't persuade my colleagues. And at the Saturday budget meeting, where we got our first look at the 2023 budget, they took what we spent last year and added a little bit to it.
There you go.
I remember
there you go.
When I was with Glendale, I had a dispute with the fire department because we had a small fire department for big city kind of problems. And they said they needed, according to the latest union regulated guideline, they wanted to add 15% to the workforce. And I said, no, we can't do that. You've got to cut it down. I mean, we cannot cut it down. You cannot cut it down. And so I had to walk back and say, okay, fine. The fire department, I'm getting rid of. Yeah. You're all being gone.
We're going to merge with Denver.
Every one of you. I'm going to merge. I'm going to try to save your jobs for Denver. But you're no longer going to be Glendale employee. You can't do that. Oh, watch me. Watch me. And they were just shocked. And that's what we did. But, you know, you've got to, well, you don't have to. Most cities are run like crap. So,
but if we have the power now, we should use it to do things exactly like that.
Exactly.
And we have the power. And we need to have people remind Mayor Nancy McNally and Mayor Pro Tem David DeMott and Councillor Rich Seymour and Councillor Lindsay Emmons to make smaller government, spend less money. Yeah. Like I even said, I'd even be willing to look at a rebate of taxes.
There you go. That would be popular. Although Polis and I'll take credit for it. So yeah. No.
Well,
hey, Bruce, we got to let you go. Thank you for your time and thank you for the work and yeah. Thank you for not giving up. You know, I mean, a lot of people would have just given up.
A lot of people haven't given up, Julie. I think I see two of them right now.
There we go.
There you go.
All right.
Well,
sir.
best of luck and keep us apprised of whatever new
shenanigans
are coming up. And we're happy.
I will do that. Thank you so much.
All right.
All right.
Thank you, Bruce.
Bye-bye. All right. Bruce Baker, then city councilman in the city of Westminster. There have been a ton of tickets there. And from Charlene, yes, thank you for not giving up. And then Leo, Chuck, didn't Glendale need their own police helicopter also? I think I don't know if Glendale did, but I do remember the time covering this that every police agency wanted their own police helicopter. And finally, they'd be like, too many.
Well,
crimes.
Then they figured out if they get forfeitures, they'd pay for it. So
right.
Seize people's property and assets sell them. I mean, you know, if.
The civil forfeiture laws are crazy. Hey, so I want to move on now to the big topic that, you know, like I was saying, Leo, I was on Monday when you were saying it'll be Wacky Wednesday. I'm like, yeah, I'm not really sure what we'll talk about, but I'm sure something will come up. And then boom, we get off. I mean, look, and the FBI is raiding President Trump's home while we speak. And we have Mark Poff, everybody's favorite, to come on. He was on the golf course. I think he cut his links time short. Mark?
No, he's a gold member at
Top Golf.
Topgolf. I mean, it doesn't get any higher or better than a premium membership to Golf.
I think I saw you there. Mark, are you there?
I am.
I mean, there. That's right. That, but you actually were on the links today, right? Not exploiting your gold membership.
I was not at Topgolf. I actually went to a course and walked 9 holes.
Woo!
You know, everybody always asks you, well, what was your score? And I said, that's not how I score golf. To me, it's how many holes can I play before I abandon keeping score?
Yeah, right.
Well, you should play like I do. I just let Chuck and Rev drive it.
She does a form of scrambles.
Whoever's best shot. It's a Julie scramble. Whoever has the best shot, I play from there.
She hits it from and then goes on.
And I always get birdies. So
I just aim for the liquor cart that goes around and see if I can hit it.
There you go. Well, I wanted to get you on. Let me just first off ask you open-endedly your reaction to this search warrant executed at Trump's home.
Well, I was actually amazed at how little the media understands how search warrants are executed and how all that works.
Okay.
You know, I heard one guy on the media say, well, hey, Trump's got a copy of the affidavit. If he wanted to release it, he could just release it. And I'm like, that's not how it works.
Right.
I have in my career written hundreds of search warrants on the Tom Clements homicide, you know, that I was on. I wrote over 35 warrants just on that one case. And what you do is you have 3 sections to a warrant. You have the cover sheet, which is the actual warrant, and that's what the judge signs that basically says, I authorize this search warrant. And that's what you hand them. You know, when you get there, you got your search warrant, and you always see it like, you know, bent over like this, you know, here's my search warrant. And actually by law, you're not required to give it to them at the beginning. You don't have to knock on the door and then hand it to them. And then there's attachment A, which is the PC affidavit, which I think we should talk about, because that there's some interesting points about a PC affidavit for a search warrant. Then you have attachment B, which is what are you searching for?
Right.
And what's interesting.
What does PC stand for?
Probable cause.
Probable cause. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting from the standpoint. You really can't write a search warrant unless there's a crime you're investigating.
Right.
So the interesting point here is, what crime are they searching for evidence for?
Right.
And that's all going to be in this affidavit. And I don't think they're going to be so clear or so willing to want to release this. And all they have to do, I've done this too, is I just seal it. So it's a separate one-page document. You say, hey, Your Honor, we're in the midst of an ongoing investigation. If this gets out, it's going to impede our investigation. Right. Well, we all know that the feds, an average investigation for the feds is about a bazillion years. You know, they're going to seal this thing forever. But the things that can't come out is the cover sheet. So you can find out what judge signed it.
Right.
And attachment B. Originally, when I started serving warrants, we wouldn't hand out attachment B. And we got in trouble for that. And they said, no, you have to. So a lot of this stuff has been established in law and rulings and all kinds of stuff. So they should have, even though they're feds and I work for, you know, the state, a local agency, you'd have to give an attachment B to the individual that you're serving the warrant to, which basically says, here's what we're searching for.
Right.
So you have to, that could be released. Here's what we're searching for.
Well, and I think,
and a list, just let me finish this up. And you have to provide before you leave, on your leaving, you give them a list of here's what we took.
Right.
And so those items could be released. I'd love to see the affidavit.
Well, the affidavit, as I understand it, is sealed, although Judicial Watch today filed a motion to unseal and the DOJ has to respond. I don't have any confidence this judge will release it. I wanted to ask you about attachment B, because I've read probably a bazillion search warrants in my time, and they're usually fairly specific. They will say, you know, you can't, and that's my question here. I mean, they'll say, you know, we're looking for computers that might have blah, 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 or we're looking for, I mean, you can't say we need to search normally, and I want you to tell me if I'm wrong here, we need to search Melania Trump's closet in case Trump hid some documents in there. I mean, what do you make of this fact that, again, they knew where the room was because they'd been there where the documents were. And apparently, and I don't know if this is coming out just through sources or maybe the attachment A, but they were looking for records possibly related to classified materials.
Spygate.
Right. Well, they've been in negotiation with the Trump people over that. We'll get to that in a second. But for 9 hours, I know, granted, it's a big house, but don't you have to be more specific? I mean, you have a search warrant. You just can't go roaming through the house looking in every drawer.
Who's going to stop you?
Well, I mean, theoretically.
The bottom line is they searched that entire house because they thought it was cool.
Yeah.
And what they'll do is they'll add, and you know, we'll see this when it comes out, they'll say items of indicia. And, you know, this is an old trick by law enforcement. They do it all the time. That allows them to get into kitchen drawers.
Okay.
Because if I'm looking for these folders, I can't start looking through kitchen drawers. I can't look through, you know, well, I mean, you could be an individual file. But when you look for, when you say you're looking for items of indicia proving ownership, that allows you to search everywhere. It's an old law enforcement trick, so they can search everywhere. They knew, I mean, you hit right on it. They knew where it was because they asked them to put an extra lock on it,
right,
on the door or whatever. So they knew where the storage was. And that's why all they had to do, like if you want to get bank records and things like that, you don't really execute a search warrant. You don't, if I need phone records from T-Mobile,
right,
I don't need a search warrant on that. I can do a court order for production of records, which is what we do in Colorado, or just do a subpoena and say, okay, we've got a judge to agree. You need to provide us these files, the ones that we've been talking about.
Right.
But that's not what they're after. That's not their goal here. Their goal, you know, because understand this, when they go in to execute a search warrant, the first person who goes in after they secure the residence, and this is an awful big residence to secure, is they bring in somebody with a nice fancy camera and they take pictures everywhere.
Okay.
So this allowed them, by the execution of a search warrant, as opposed to a subpoena,
right,
they get the photo document and maybe even videotape the entire location, and they get to go into Trump's, you know, suite, his bedroom, go through Melania's, you know, closet, her underwear drawer.
Right.
Could you hide? It could be.
I always hide National Archives documents there.
I mean, the thing to say how much it is intrusive. Now, even when I was a detective with law enforcement, yeah, we have to search everywhere. But the bottom line is we were sensitive to a lot of this stuff and we didn't release it to the media. How long do you think it's going to take until something gets accidentally released or there's a leak?
Right.
Well, they already
this is nothing but an opportunity.
They already said they had an informer that told them where all the documents were.
Well, did they actually even know?
Well, they knew. They actually looked at the room and the F or whoever these people were said, could you put an extra lock on this door, which supposedly did. Now, I don't know if everything I read, you know, out there is true, but the bottom line is they didn't have to execute a search warrant. All they had to do was do a subpoena for the records and get the records that they wanted that were in question. So if we get to read this PC affidavit, the probable cause affidavit, and this is all about the National Archives trying to get, then you've got to be kidding me. You know, and this is going to blow back on them and cause all kinds of problems. But I think my conspiracy theorist side of me, I think they know they're going to get their asses kicked in November. And so they want to create an event like another January 6th or whatever. They want to stir. I think one possible reason for this is they want to stir up a lot of the Trump supporters to see if they can stir something to happen. You know, maybe there's another protest at the Capitol or in Washington or whatever they can do. They want to poke Donald Trump into announcing he's running for president before the election.
Well, and here, and Charlene, I just want to, so Charlene is saying, don't we know already they've disregarded all legal means of achieving their commie takeover? Why do we get in the weeds and not stay focused on the big picture and how to stop it rather than lamenting their tactics? Charlene, I agree with that, but I just want to push back a little bit and say, I just think, and that's why I wanted Mark to talk about this, it's important that people understand how much their tactics are violating the Constitution, because we cannot get used to this. We can't just say, well, we know they cheat. So I think, and I know it's tedious and I know we all get tired, but I think we all always have to say, you got to outline first just to say how bad this is, because we got to keep reminding ourselves how corrupt this is. Because, I mean, do we, any of us trust that it's even a legitimate search warrant? Look at what they did with the Spygate search warrants. They just made it up, right?
There's an article in Newsweek that said the FBI thought that this would just go over easy and it would fly under the radar, and that they'd miscalculated the adverse thing. I don't know. Showing up with machine gun guys and 30 people in front of Mar-a-Lago, you thought that would roll under the radar?
There you go. Charlene, go ahead. I think you're highlighted there.
Oh, can you hear me?
We can.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Well, Paul was really getting into it then. And Mike Huckabee talked about this. He said it's a strategy on their part to trigger the Trumpers to get us out on the streets. And they can even put provocateurs out there.
No, they wouldn't do that.
No.
Ray Epps is at home.
They can demonize us prior to the midterms. It's like they're taking on both DeSantis in his home territory, Florida, and Trump. They're trying to take him out now while they still can. Right. And this was all something to get us riled up. Could you hear anything I said?
Yeah, we could hear it all. I think, Charlene, I think there are also wheels within wheels here. I think another thing is, I suspect they will indict Trump. I'm going to bet you they indict him for something like this, and they're going to indict him
January 6th.
I mean, and they know it may or may not stick, but like Mark Elias, the Democrat evil strategist, give it a shot. I mean, I think they want to do anything and everything they can. I mean, Donald Trump is in court today, right? If it's Tuesday, there's another subpoena for him. I mean, what do you guys think of that?
Yeah, I well, I think they're so afraid of Donald Trump that they are doing whatever they can to try to get it, or to disallow him from running again.
Right.
And I've heard other sides that they really want to push him into announcing before the midterms, and they want Trump in the election. And I'm like, I don't think someone taunts, on something. Because here's the problem. We've seen Trump for 4 years.
Right.
And I get, and all this stuff has happened, and we don't want to talk about the election. There's many other times to talk about that, but we've seen Biden for not even 2 years. And it's like, holy crap. I love what Trump did. Biden is sinking us into the abyss. Do you really think that Biden's not running again? That's my prediction. Yeah. There's no chance of Biden running again, but they don't want Trump back in here because we got to see what we got for Trump for 4 years.
Right.
And yeah, I get that his Twitter's maybe upset some people. Okay. But the bottom line is his administration was absolutely wonderful in what he did. And in 2 years, Biden has totally destroyed what Trump did in four. I just don't think they are in panic mode
right now.
And another part that I think we definitely need to talk about is Scott Perry. I actually think this is bigger than Trump. Trump is so big. Okay, go ahead.
I agree with you on that, but let you say that, and then we'll move on to talk about Scott Perry, because that's where it starts to hit home for the rest of us. So your final thoughts on that, Charlene?
Oh, yeah. Well, what I was going to say is this whole thing is to trigger Trump's base, because they cannot peel Trump's base away from him, and they are so threatened by that because of the big turnout, and they're afraid he's going to announce a run. So they want to take him out and DeSantis, but primarily they want to demonize his supporters, because if they can demonize us, then they can. That provides cover for their steal.
Well, Marco Rubio already said it. He said, now they'll say these people are dangerous insurrectionists, extremists, and they'll start. There's no greater violation of our Constitution than to have people in jail without bail for over a year.
Oh,
and yet you hear nothing about it.
Yeah.
You just hear absolutely nothing
about
it.
Except for Molly Hemingway.
Well,
right. So I think we should just stay home and not let him trigger us. And
that's what they want, too.
They want that, too. Exactly. Okay, that's all I have.
Hey, Charlene, thank you. Okay, wait a
minute.
Okay.
As a practical matter, getting rid of Trump is not sufficient, because DeSantis would just go right in there.
Exactly.
So they've got to get DeSantis out too, so we're left with, I don't know, Nikki Haley or something.
They've got to get us demoralized and demonized is what they're working on right now.
Exactly.
Okay, thanks.
Charlene, thank you there. And Mark, let me ask you then, because I think to both of your points, to talk about Rick Perry, what they did when they seized his cell phone, because that is if they can do that to Trump and they can do that to Perry, they can do that to us. So talk about that, Mark.
Well, the thing about Scott Perry that interests me is there's a thing whenever you get warrants for stuff, we always listen to this thing called a staleness issue. How current is the evidence that you're requiring this search warrant for? So if truly they took or seized Scott Perry's cell phone over January 6th stuff, we're talking, 18, 20 months later? There's a huge staleness issue that should have been involved. But here's the part that really we should be concerned about. They stopped him. Three FBI agents stopped Scott Perry while he was traveling with his family on vacation. How did the FBI know where he was?
Good point.
They wouldn't know.
How on earth do they have a clue where he was? If they weren't monitoring his location, what did they do? Did they ping his cell phone to find out where he was? Did they use triggerfish that we're not supposed to talk about to locate him, because triggerfish can locate somebody within 10 meters? I mean, what did the FBI use to determine where Scott Perry was?
Well, they can't comment on an ongoing investigation.
That
is the trickiest part. Not so much that they served this warrant, but how in the hell did the FBI know exactly where to find him when he's traveling?
Right. It's an exact, and at that particular point too, it's not like they said, oh God, we just missed him. Right. Somehow or another, they had people in place. Well, also the same thing, they did it with John Eastman, Trump's lawyers, Chuck represents too, in a case here in Colorado. He's coming out of a restaurant or something like that. And all of a sudden, zoom, they zero in and grab his phone. The same exact question. How they know where John Eastman was eating,
Well, we have to wonder if they're using triggerfish illegally.
Now, what's
they're
a supposed triggerfish? To
be, it's the code name for their, it's a truck. A lot of people think it's a van. I've actually been given a tour of the truck and shown by a Secret Service agent how it works and stuff. It's a device that can actually locate your cell phone. What it does is this truck goes into somebody's network, like AT&T's network, and it shows up as a tower, as a rogue tower in their network. And then they drive around, and then when they connect to the phone, so they have to know the general area of a person, like South Denver or something, then they'll drive the truck down there, turn their little tower on, they lock on to his phone, and they also lock on to a whole bunch of other phones, but then they say, this is the phone I care about. So then they whack all the other phones off their tower, they lock onto your phone, and then they use location equipment to track you down. And the FBI has this, ATF has this, Secret Service has
IRS
this.
IRS has this.
Well, IRS has everything else. In fact, I'm turning in my application. You know, if we're going to have all these new agents, I want to be on the inside.
And that's bigger than hell. Don't want to be out. That's bigger than most standing armies in the world. That's bigger than most standing armies in the world.
Well, that's and I think that one of the things we're talking about, and we're all right. I mean, there's so many aspects to this, and it's, we got to just be careful to not get so used to it that we don't continue to stay outraged, even though it's hard to stay outraged. But you're right. I mean, they're going to turn this around, and anybody who complains, we're going to be terrorists. Twitter is already can't kick Paul Sperry off for raising questions about it. He's with Real Clear Investigations, again, for questioning what the FBI's motive was here. I mean, I think they're going to use it to censor us again, to crack down on us, and as we've seen with January 6th, and to arrest us as terrorists.
And here's the problem. I mean, just like the Clinton impeachment in the 90s, yeah. You know, that was a bullshit impeachment, and it didn't go through. But in retaliation for that, when it came down to Trump, they did it. And now all these tactics, Republicans at some point will mimic those tactics and we'll lose more of our rights, except we'll be both sides.
Yeah.
It's really shocking. And it's, you know, the FBI, I just read a thing from Truman, you know, back when the FBI was loved, and he's saying, you know, they're just a Stasi. They're just a Gestapo. They're into blackmail. They're into sexual scandal. This is in the 40s, you know, 70 years later, what are they? I mean, and how do you get rid of the FBI? I mean, you do have to go, okay, Capitol Police are new FBI. All you thousands, or, you know, you're not as big as the IRS, but all you guys,
we make them all at-will employees, which is what, that's another thing. I mean, I also guess that part of this reason they wanted to get into there is to, because Trump had declassified the Spygate documents. And as we saw, I don't know, you may not remember this, Mark, but in the Clements case, when they were talking about releasing Turkey, right? And people were asking for records from Hickenlooper's office about the conversations that went on that were public records. Hickenlooper was like, oh, we destroyed those. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Fortunately, the Department of Correction says, oh, guess what? We have them, you know? And so Hickenlooper handed over like one document. So I think that's what they're afraid of too, is they're requesting some of these Spygate documents. I think the Department of Justice wants to hand over one or two pieces of paper, but I bet you Trump has it someplace. And I bet that's what they want too.
Well, there's more to this than meets the eye.
Right.
This cannot be, there's no way that this is about 13 boxes of stuff that needs to go to the National Archives. Again, they could have just written a subpoena for that. And then Trump could have unlocked the door, had them delivered to the front door, and they could have picked them up. They're trying to embarrass Trump. They're trying to get anything that they can. You know, who knows what pictures are going to come out of, get leaked accidentally. And this poor Scott Perry, I mean, his cell phone, I'd rather have somebody, I think, search my house than go through my cell phone.
That's right.
And he even said, you know, there's nothing on this phone. This is personal communications between him and his wife. Who knows what kind of communications that they consider to be private that are going to come out. We've already seen this in the January 6th hearings where Liz Cheney and others have just released, or, you know, stuff has leaked out that has nothing to do with January 6th and everything to do with embarrassing people.
Right.
And they're targeting Trump supporters that are still, how convenient that he's in Pennsylvania, you know, a state that's very critical for the midterms, you know, and now, you know, we have no idea what's going to happen, but they need to release. I'm in full support of this. I don't give a crap about their investigation. This is much bigger than a little investigation. They need to release that affidavit to see, has Biden weaponized the FBI and the Department of Justice?
I think, you think?
Yeah, I think, I mean,
I think it's very clear for me. Well,
and I think, because here's the thing, even if the affidavit, you know, says that they're looking for this, it's never been done before. I mean, but the thing that's why we all have to be very careful, because we all kind of float around in our little happy places saying, all right, well, the IRS isn't going to actually come arrest me, right? And I'm sure, you know, if you're done.
That's why they're getting all the rounds and all the arms.
Right, that's why they need ammunition. I mean, I think we need to remember that just because they, you know, because they haven't done something before doesn't mean they can't do it now. And I think, as you said, the Democrats are desperate. They don't care if it looks bad. They need to do anything, and they don't care that we all sit here and say, well, they never did it to Obama, they never did it to Hillary Clinton. They could care less about that.
Yeah, they're going to indict them. I mean, for something. There's going to be some reason that they're going to say does not allow him to run for president in 24. And it doesn't matter.
That's why the Archives Act is so important. It was signed into law, and it says if you're convicted under this act, you're disqualified from any position. Well, that's probably unconstitutional, but it's there and it says it. There's nothing in the Constitution that says anything about, you know, if you're in prison. Eugene Debs ran from a prison in Atlanta in 1920.
That's what Alan Dershowitz said. You could be on death row, you know, and still run for president.
They'll pardon yourself afterward.
Exactly.
But actually, I think they're kind of missing the point, because I've told you in the past, I'm not massively political. And one of the things I've said is that we typically have people who love Trump, and then we have Liz Cheney and her group of individuals, I should say morons, that are the never Trumpers. And then there's that group in the middle, and I'm kind of the group in the middle. I really like DeSantis. I like Tim Scott, and there's others that I like. I think they're actually shooting themselves in the foot in a lot of this stuff. If they left it alone and let the system work, they actually could be all this stuff that happens in the Republican Party. But when I see this happen to Trump, and I'm in the middle, I really consider myself in the middle. I like Trump. I thought Trump did a great job, but I could go with somebody else. I mean, I think that puts me kind of in the middle. They're pissing me off. I am as one of these individuals that's kind of like, look, I'm not I don't love Donald Trump. I like what he did, but I'm not against him. But you're getting me to the point where I'm saying, well, crap, you know, because of what they're doing, you know, Trump would have my support anyway. He would have my vote. If he got the Republican nominee, I have no issues voting for him. But now they kind of energized me. What about the independents?
Oh, sure.
You know, because they say that's the problem.
Right.
You know, if I was an independent, I'm going, holy cow, I can't support the Democrats. This is crazy.
Right. No, the corruption. You know,
but they knew all that.
Blow up in their face.
They knew all that going in. And so their plan has to be consistent with the fact that everybody be temporarily pissed off.
Let me move on. Hey, well, listen, we got to run, Mark.
Gotta head out. Thanks again.
Thank you, because I know it's short notice, and we had to pull you off the golf course. So
I know you've got an important appointment over at Top Golf.
Thank you, sir.
Take care.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, appreciate your time too. Thank you to everybody on Zoom, as always, the great guys at BBS Radio and Bruce Baker. We will see you all on Friday. We're going to have Scott Powell on to talk about this. We had him on last Friday, and also talking about this ongoing China buying all the farmland next to.
That's a good idea.
What could go wrong with that?
Well, nothing could go wrong with it. They're our friends. That's right, everybody. Thanks very much. Thanks to the BBC and
BBS.
BBC. Yeah. BBS.
Today was Wacky Wednesday, but we'll see you on Party Friday.
Take care.